Micah put his hands on my shoulders.
It happens when your beast controls you at first. The first few full moons will be almost complete blackouts until you can begin to access the memories, and that will take work.
Reese had leaned back across the seat, half reclining, and started to undo his belt. This close, I could see, or thought I saw, what was wrong with the hair on his chest and stomach. I tried to move forward, but Micah held me, hands tightening on my shoulders. I stretched out my hand and could brush fingertips over Reese's stomach. The light touch of my fingers over his skin made him stop fussing with his belt, made him look at me. It wasn't hair.
Feathers, I said softly, like the down on a baby chicken. So soft.
I wanted to run my hands over the surprising texture of it, to roll my body across the feathers and the heat of his skin. I could hear his heart and his chest pounding, and when I looked up, I met his gaze. His pulse was in his neck, like a trapped thing, and I could taste his fear. That one touch of my hand, the soft, dreamy quality of my voice, had frightened him. Micah's arms wrapped around my neck and shoulders and drew me in against his body with his legs on either side of me. He leaned over me, his face pressed to mine, and said,
"Shh, Anita, shh."
But it was more than a soothing voice. I could feel his beast calling to mine, as if he'd rolled his hand through my body, but so much larger. And that touch made my body tighten, grow wet. It brought my own pulse into my throat.
What did you do?
I sounded breathless.
The hunger can be turned to sex, Micah said.
I wasn't going to feed, I said.
Your skin went hot. Our bodies spike a temperature just before we change, like a human before a seizure.
I turned, still held in his arms, half pinned between his knees.
You thought I was going to change?
It usually takes weeks, or at least the first full moon for the first shape change. But you seem to be gaining problems faster than normal. If you changed for the first time here, I don't think either Raphael or I would be able to keep you from tearing Reese up.
The first change is very violent, Raphael said, and even the back seat of a limo doesn't have much room to hide or to run in.
Reese looked at me from only inches away, held in Micah's arms, his body, and I knew that it wasn't romantic. He was holding on in case the sex as distraction didn't work.
She's been Nimara for over a year, Reese said, but still human until recently, Raphael said.
Reese stared at me for a second or two, then said,
Very well. I have a birthmark in the shape of a swan. My family knew from my birth what I was meant to be.
I've heard of such things,
Micah said,
but I thought it was legend.
Reese shook his head.
It's very true.
He sat back in his seat, tucking his undershirt down in front.
Casper had feathers instead of hair on his head, I said.
I'm told that if I live long enough, that gradually that will happen to me.
There was something in his voice that said he wasn't looking forward to the prospect.
You don't sound happy, I said.
He frowned at me, rebuttoning his shirt.
You were human once, Miss Blake. I've never been human. I was born a swan king. I was raised to take my place as their king from my earliest memories. You have no idea what that's like. I insisted on going to college, on getting a degree, but I may never get to use it because going from place to place caring for the other swans keeps me very busy.
I stayed in the circle of Micah's body, but the tension was draining away. I saw my first soul when I was 10, and my first ghost earlier than that, Reese. At 13, I accidentally raised my dog that had died. I've never been human, Reese. Trust me on that.
You sound bitter about it,
he said. I nodded.
Oh, yeah.
You must both accept who and what you are, or you will make yourselves miserable,
Raphael said. We both looked at him, and I don't think either look was friendly.
Give me a week or two to come to terms with being a kitty cat, I said.
I am not referring to you being Nimara for real, Raphael said. From the moment I met you, Anita, You have half-hated what you are. As Richard has run from his beast, so you have run from your own gifts.
I don't need a philosophy lesson, Raphael.
I think you do, and badly, but I'll let that go, if it bothers you so very much.
Don't even start on me, Reese said. I've had people preach to me all my life that I'm blessed and not cursed. If my entire family couldn't convince me of it, you might as well not even try.
Raphael shrugged, then turned back to me. Let's pick a different topic, because we are only minutes away from the Lupinar, and I saw Micah's beast, his energy, pass through you, and your beast responded.
You saw it? I asked.
He nodded. His energy is very blue, and yours is very red, and they mingled.
So you got what, purple? I said.
Micah hugged me a little tighter, a warning, I think, not to be flippant, but Raphael was more direct.
No jokes, Anita. If I saw it, so will Richard.
He's my Nimiraj, I said.
You don't understand, Anita. Micah said he thought birthmarks in the shape of your beast was legend. Well, until just now, I believed talk of a perfect mate was legend. Like true fated love, just a romantic story.
Raphael's already serious face got even more solemn.
You recognize some bond from the beginning, so the stories go. But it's only after you have sex for the first time that your beasts can roll through each other's bodies. Only physical intimacy will allow such metaphysical intimacy.
I glanced down from those hard, demanding eyes, but finally made myself look back up.
What are you asking, Raphael?
Not really asking. Telling. Telling you that I know you had sex with Micah, and that even though Richard has dumped you and publicly declared that you and he are no longer a couple, he won't like it.
That was an understatement. I pulled away from Micah, and he let me go. No lingering touches. I moved away, and he allowed it. It earned him brownie points.
Richard dumped me, Raphael, not the other way around. He doesn't have any right to bitch about what I do.
If he dumped her, then she's free to do what she wants, Reese said. The Ulfric has only himself to blame. Logically, you're right. But when has logic dictated how a man acts when he sees the love of his life in someone else's arms?
The bitter way Raphael said it made me look at him, study his face. He sounded like he was speaking from experience.
As Ulfric to my Nimera, he has no authority over me.
Tonight is going to be dangerous enough, Anita. You don't need to make Richard angry.
I don't want to make things worse. God knows they're bad enough as they are.
You're angry with him for dumping you, Raphael said.
I started to say no, then realized he might be right. Maybe.
You want to hurt him.
I started to say no, then stopped and tried to think, really think about how I felt. I was angry and hurt that he could just cast me aside. Okay, it hadn't been that simple, but still.
Yeah, I'm hurt, and maybe a part of me wants to punish Richard for that, but it's not just him dumping me. It's the mess he's made of the pack. He's endangered people I care about, and he's doing his usual Boy Scout shit that doesn't even work well in the human world, let alone with a bunch of werewolves. I'm tired, Raphael. I'm tired of it, and him.
It sounds like you might have dumped him if he hadn't beat you to it.
I came back to make it work, to see if we could make some sense of it all. But he has to give up that moral code of his that has never worked for him or anyone around him.
To give up his moral code is to give up being who he is.
I nodded.
I know.
And just saying that made me feel worse.
He can't change, and staying who he is going to get him killed.
And maybe you and Jean-Claude with him, Raphael said.
Does everyone know that part?
It's standard that if you kill a vampire's human servant, the vampire may not survive the death. And if you kill a vampire, their human servants either die or go crazy. Logic dictates that killing either of you endangers the other.
I still didn't like that everyone knew that to kill one of us might kill all of us. Made it too damn easy for assassins.
What do you want me to say, Raphael? That Richard and I have a fundamental difference of philosophy in nearly every important area? There's more than one reason we didn't get married and live happily ever after. That maybe he's going to have to choose between survival or his morals? That I'm afraid he'd almost rather die than compromise those morals? Yeah, I'm afraid.
It's going to kill a little piece of him to see me with Micah. I'd spare him if I could, but I didn't choose any of this.
You take no blame in this, Raphael said.
I sighed. If I hadn't left for 6 months, maybe I could have talked him out of the democracy with his pack. Maybe if I'd been here, a lot of things would be different, but I wasn't here, and I can't change that. All I can do is try and fix what got broke.
You think you can fix this? All of it?
Raphael asked. I shrugged. Ask me again after I've met Jacob and seen how Richard deals as Ulfric with all of them. I need a feel for the dynamics before I say if it's fixable.
How would you fix it?
Micah asked. I glanced back at him. If Jacob and a few others are the problem, then it's fixable.
Killing the ones who stand against Richard won't fix things, Anita,
Raphael said.
The experiment in democracy must end. Richard must begin being harsher to those who would stand against him. He must be frightening to them, or there will be another Jacob, and another after that.
I nodded. You're preaching to the choir here, Raphael.
If you are not his girlfriend or his lover, then I fear that your influence over Richard will be slight.
I'm not sure I had a lot of influence over him when we were dating.
If you cannot talk sense into him, then eventually Richard will die, and someone else, probably Jacob, will take over the pack. The first thing any good conqueror does is kill those closest and most loyal to the executed leader.
You think Jacob is that practical? I asked.
Yes,
Raphael said. What do you want me to do?
I want you to hide the fact that you and Micah are lovers.
I glanced behind me at Micah. He shrugged, face peaceful.
I told you I wanted you on any terms that you wished, Anita. What do I have to do to convince you I meant that?
I searched his face, tried to find something false in it, and couldn't. Maybe he was that good a liar. Maybe I was just being too suspicious. When we were with the Leopards, just the Leopards, I was completely comfortable with you. It felt right, and why doesn't it feel that way now?
You're having second thoughts, Rhys said.
No, Raphael said. He looked at Micah, and the two of them had major eye contact. The staring contest went on so long that I had to interrupt. One of you better start talking, I said. Raphael inclined his head at Micah as if to say, go ahead. I turned to Micah.
All right,
he said, and he seemed to be choosing his words carefully. I was almost positive I wasn't going to like this conversation.
Every pard, every group of shifters that is healthy has a group mind.
You mean a group identity? I asked.
Not exactly. It's more...
He frowned.
It's more like a coven that's worked magic together for a while. They begin to be parts of a whole when it comes to working magic or healing. Together, they form more than they form separately.
Okay, but what's that have to do with why I felt more comfortable when it was just us leopards?
If you feel differently when the leopards are around you, then we're forming a group mind. It usually takes months to forge that kind of bond between shifters. Maybe it's just a bond with your own leopards. The change coming on could have set it in motion.
But you think it's more than that, don't you? He nodded.
I think you're forming a group mind with my pard, that in effect, the decision to join our pards into one unit has already been made.
I haven't decided anything.
Haven't you?
He asked. He looked so reasonable sitting there, hands clasped in front of him, leaning a little towards me. So earnest. Look, the sex was great. But I'm not ready to pick out China patterns here. You do understand that. There was a feeling very close to panic in the pit of my stomach.
Sometimes your beast picks for you,
Raphael said. I looked at him. What does that mean?
If you are already a part of a group mind with his pard, then your beast has chosen for you, Anita. It's more intimate than being his lover because it's not just him that you have a commitment to.
I gave him wide eyes. Are you saying that I'm going to feel responsible for the safety and well-being of all his were-leopards as well as my own? Raphael nodded.
Probably.
I looked back at Micah. How about you? You feel responsible for my people? He sighed, and it was heavy, not happy at all.
I didn't expect to form a bond this quickly. I've never seen it work this fast.
And? I said. His mouth moved,
almost a smile. And if we've really formed a group mind, then yes, I'll feel responsible for your people.
You don't sound happy about that.
Nothing personal, but your cats are a mess.
Yours are so much healthier, I said. Gina looks like someone who's been kicked once too often.
Micah's eyes hardened, and he searched my face. No one talked to you. They wouldn't dare.
No one tattled Micah, but I could see it on her. Smell the defeat. Someone's damn near broken her, and it's recent or ongoing. She got a bad boyfriend?
His face closed down. He didn't like that I'd figured that out. Something like that.
But his pulse had sped up, and I knew he was hiding something from me, something that scared him. What aren't you telling me, Micah?
His gaze flicked past me to Raphael. Will she be able to read my people more easily as time goes on? And you, hers, Raphael said. Her people are pretty easy to read now, he said.
I was watching his face. He was controlling his body, keeping the tension out of it, but I could taste the speed of his pulse and the fear. It wasn't just a small fear, either. The thought that I could read his people so completely almost terrified him. I laid my hand over his clasped ones, and he turned serious, guarded eyes to me. Why does it scare you that I knew that Gina is being abused? He tensed under my hand and pulled away gently, but he definitely didn't want me to touch him.
Gina wouldn't like it if you knew.
As her Nimmer Raj, aren't you supposed to protect her from abusive assholes?
I've done my best for her, he said, but it sounded defensive.
Kick the guy's ass and forbid her to see him again. It's a simple problem. Don't complicate it. Or is she in love with him?
He shook his head, eyes down, his hands clutching so tight that the skin mottled.
His voice came out even, normal, but that terrible tension shook through his hands.
No, she's not in love with him.
Then what's the problem?
It's more complicated than you could ever imagine.
He looked up and there was anger in his eyes now. I started to reach out to touch him, then let my hand fall back. If we really are forming one pard, if I really am her Nimir Ra, then no one's allowed to hurt her. No one hurts my people.
The wolves took your Gregory, he said.
The anger was still in his eyes, trembling down his hands. And we're going to get him back.
I know you've had a hard life. I've heard some of the stories, but you talk as if you're young and naive. Sometimes, no matter how hard you try, you can't save everyone.
It was my turn to look down. I've lost people. I've failed people, and they've gotten hurt and dead. I raised my eyes to meet his gaze. But the people who hurt them, killed them, they're dead too. Maybe I can't keep everyone safe, but I'm damn fine at revenge.
But the harm still happens. The dead don't really walk again. Zombies are just corpses, Anita. They aren't the people you lost.
I know that last better than you do, Micah. He nodded. Some of the terrible tension had eased away from him, but it left his eyes haunted with some old pain that was still raw.
I've done everything I can for Gina and the others, and it's still not enough. It will never be enough.
I touched his hands, and this time he let me slide my hands over his. Maybe together we can be enough for them all.
He searched my face. You really mean that, don't you? Anita rarely says anything she doesn't mean, Raphael said. But if I were her, I'd ask first what the problems are before I promised to fix them.
I had to smile. I was just about to ask, what is Gina into that's got you so terrified?
He turned his hands, so he was holding mine tight. He looked into my eyes. The look was not love or even lust, but so serious. Let's save your leopard first, then ask me again, and I'll tell you all of it.
The car slowed and turned. Gravel sounded under the tires. It was the turn off to the farm that fronted the woods around the Lupinar. Tell me some of it now, Micah. I need something here, now.
He sighed, looked down at his clasped hands, then up slowly to meet my eyes. Once we were taken over by a very bad man.
He still wants us, and I'm searching for a home strong enough to keep us safe.
Why are you afraid to tell me? His eyes widened a little.
Most pards don't want that kind of trouble.
I smiled. Trouble is my middle name. He looked a little puzzled. I guess I was the only one who liked film noir. I'm not going to kick you guys out because of some asshole alpha. Let me know which way the danger's coming from, and I'll deal with it.
I wish I had your confidence.
There was a weight to his gaze of such sorrow, such horrible loss. It made me shiver to see it, and he let go of my hands, sliding away from me just before Merle opened the door and offered a hand out. He didn't take the hand, but he slid out into the dark. Reese followed him with a look at Raphael, as if the Rat King had told him to get out and give us some privacy. I turned to Raphael. You have something to say?
Be careful of that one, Anita. None of us know him or his people.
Funny, I was pretty much thinking the same thing.
Even though he can make your beast roil through your body?
I met his dark, dark eyes. Maybe especially because of that. Raphael smiled.
I should know by now that you are not a person to let her affections cloud her vision.
Oh, it can be clouded, but never for long.
You sound wistful, he said.
Sometimes I wonder what it would be like to actually be able to just fall in love and not weigh the risks first.
If it works out, it's the best thing in the world. If it doesn't work out, it's like having your heart torn out and chopped up into little pieces while you watch. It leaves a big hollow space that never really heals.
I looked at him, unsure what to say, but finally, you sound like experience talking.
I've got an ex-wife and a son. They live in a different state, as far away from me as she could drag him.
What went wrong, if you don't mind me asking?
She wasn't strong enough to handle what I am. I didn't hide anything from her. She knew everything before we were married. If I hadn't been so much in love with her, I'd have seen that she was weak. It's my job as king to know who's strong and who isn't. But she fooled me, because I wanted to be fooled. I know that now. She is what she is. Not her fault. I can't even regret her getting pregnant right away. I love my son.
Do you ever get to see him? He shook his head.
I get to fly in twice a year and have supervised visits. She's made him afraid of me.
I started to reach out to him, hesitated, then thought, what the hell? I took his hand and he looked startled, then smiled. I'm sorry, Raphael. More than I can ever say. He squeezed my hand, then moved back from me.
Just thought you ought to know that falling blindly in love isn't at all the way all those poems and songs make it sound. It hurts like hell.
I did fall in love like that once, I said. He raised his eyebrows at me.
Not since I've known you.
No, in college. I was engaged, thought it was true love.
What happened?
His mom found out my mother was Mexican, and she didn't want her little blonde-haired, blue-eyed family tree getting contaminated.
You were engaged before they'd met your family?
They'd met my father and his second wife, but they are both good little Aryans, very Nordic. My stepmother didn't like pictures of my mother being out, so they were all in my room. I wasn't hiding it, but that's how my almost mother-in-law took it. Funny thing, her son knew. I'd told him the whole story. It hadn't mattered until his mom threatened to cut him off from the family money.
Now I'm sorry.
Your story is more pitiful.
That doesn't make me feel better,
he said, smiling. I smiled back, but neither of us really looked happy. Ain't love grand? I said.
You can answer your own question after you see Richard and Micah in the Lupinar together.
I shook my head. I don't love Micah. Not really. Not yet.
But?
He said. I sighed. But I almost wish I did. It would make seeing Richard less painful. I don't know how I'm going to feel seeing him tonight and knowing that he's not mine anymore.
Probably about the same way he'll feel when he sees you.
Is that supposed to make me feel better?
No, it's just the truth. Remember that cutting you out of his life was forced on him. He loves you, Anita, for better or worse.
I love him, but I won't let him kill Gregory. And I won't let him cost Sylvie her life. I won't let him take the pack down to rack and ruin because of some idealistic set of rules that only he is paying attention to.
If you kill Jacob and his followers without Richard's permission, then he may send the pack after you and your leopards. If you are not Lucoy, not Lupa, then to let their deaths go unpunished would make him appear so weak you might as well let Jacob kill him.
Then what am I supposed to do?
I don't know.
Merle stuck his head in the car.
We've got wolves out here. Your rats are holding them back, but they're getting impatient.
We're coming,
Raphael said. He looked across the seat at me.
Shall we?
I nodded. I guess it'd be silly not to get out of the car. He slid out to the edge of the seat, then hesitated, holding his arm out for me. Normally, I wouldn't have taken it, but tonight we were trying for a show of solidarity and style. So I stepped out of the car on the Rat King's arm like a trophy wife, except for the wrist sheaths and the two folding knives hidden in my clothing. Somehow I think trophy wives wear more makeup and less cutlery. But hey, I have never met a trophy wife. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they know what I know, that the true way to a man's heart is 6 inches of metal between his ribs. Sometimes 4 inches will do the job, but to be really sure, I like to have 6. Funny how phallic objects are always more useful the bigger they are. Anyone who tells you size doesn't matter has been seeing too many small knives. 22. The clearing was huge, but not huge enough. The cars, trucks, and vans filled most of the available ground. Some parked so far under the trees that the paint jobs had to have gotten scratched all to hell. There wasn't room for all the were-rats to park, and the cars filled the gravel drive until it was just another parking lot. Some people ended up parked beside the road, or so they said, as they drifted up through the trees. Raphael had brought all his rats, about 200 of them. The treaty between the rats and wolves dictated that their numbers had to top at 200. Raphael had agreed to that on the understanding that the much larger werewolf pack, 600 or so, would come to his aid if needed, no questions asked. Your enemies are my enemies, sort of thing. He'd explained that in the last few minutes, and it meant that he was risking a great deal tonight. Made me feel guilty. Made me wish I'd found a way to sneak a gun into the Lupinar. Truthfully, I hadn't even tried. Was I growing soft? Overconfident? Or just tired? The tallest woman I'd ever seen came to stand beside Raphael and me. She was at least 6 feet 6 inches, broad-shouldered, and had the muscles that only serious weightlifting will give you. She was wearing a black sports bra across her tanned chest and a pair of faded black jeans. Her dark hair was caught back in a tight ponytail, leaving her face clean and startling with not a touch of makeup on it.
This is Claudia. She's going to be one of your enforcers for the night,
Raphael said. I opened my mouth to protest, but he stared me into silence. His face so serious.
You have were-leopards, but only Micah has bodyguards. We can't afford to lose you, Anita. Not for something stupid like this.
If I can't take care of myself, then what good is my threat?
Richard will have his skull and Hattie. I will have my guards. Micah has his. Only you are without escort. Raina kept the were-leopards as an adjunct to the werewolves. They never really grew into a full pard, not really. Even Micah's people added to yours don't have the right personnel for a working pard. You have too many submissives and not enough dominance. So tonight you will have Claudia and Igor.
Zane said,
We can take care of Anita.
No, we can't,
Nathaniel said. I stared at him. He touched my arm.
Take the help, Anita, please.
We can protect her,
Micah said. Merle echoed him.
And if you have to choose between saving Micah or saving Anita, which one will you choose?
Raphael asked. Merle looked away, but Noah said,
Micah. Exactly. Won't your rats feel just as torn between you and Anita as my leopards would?
Micah asked.
No, because I'll have bodyguards. My Rodare, my gang, runs high to enforcers and professional soldiers. Why do you think that Reyna and Marcus agreed to the treaty when Richard brought it to them? They'd never have allied with us if we weren't stronger than just our numbers.
I don't... He actually touched my mouth with his finger.
No, Anita. When this is over, and you are truly Nimir Ra, then you will need to advertise for enforcers of your own. Until then, I'll share.
I moved his hand away from my mouth. I don't think this is necessary.
I do, he said.
I agree, Cherry said. Finally, Micah said,
Agreed.
Merle and Noah both gave him a funny look, then exchanged glances with each other. I haven't agreed to this, I said. Nathaniel leaned into me and said,
If you don't give in on this, we'll still be standing here an hour from now.
I frowned at him. He smiled and shrugged. I turned to the bodyguard in question. She just looked at me, face impassive, as if it didn't matter to her one way or another. A man moved up beside her. He was about 2 inches shorter than she was, broader through the shoulders, and had so many tattoos that for a second I thought he was wearing a colorful long-sleeved shirt. His tank top was small and strained over the swell of his chest. Jeans and work boots completed his outfit. He was bald, with a tattoo of a dragon curling around his ears and the back of his skull. Even by starlight, you could see the design of the tat was oriental and well done. How do you guys feel about putting your life on the line for someone you just met?
You saved our king's life,
the man said.
We owe you a life.
Even if it's your own, I said.
Them's the breaks, he said.
I stared up at the woman. You agree with that?
Like Igor says, we owe you one.
It always made me uncomfortable when people were willing to put my safety ahead of their own. I just wasn't really comfy with the concept of bodyguards, but what the hell? I put my hand out. They exchanged glances between them, then shook my hand. Igor touched me like he was afraid I'd break, and Claudia tried to squeeze hard enough to make me cry uncle. I didn't. I smiled pleasantly at her because I knew she wouldn't really hurt me. She just wanted to see if I'd squirm. My pleasant smile made her frown, but she let go of my hand. My hand actually ached just a little, and if my healing powers weren't up to it, I'd be bruised in the morning. Damn. Raphael turned to some of his rats, giving instructions, leaving me alone with the two bodyguards. Is Igor your real name? I asked.
Nickname, he said.
What's your real name? He smiled and shook his head.
What could be worse than Igor?
I asked. His smile widened to a grin.
Wouldn't you like to know?
It made me smile, and some tightness in my chest eased. You'd almost think I was relieved to have bodyguards of my own.
Nah, not me. I didn't need no stinking bodyguards.
I probably wouldn't need them, but extra muscle is like extra ammunition. If you need it, it's good to have it. If you don't need it, then it can always go back in the box. Truth was, I felt more protective of my leopards than protected by them. Sad, but true. And I didn't entirely trust Merle or Noah or even Micah. He was keeping things from me, and I didn't like that. Some women are just never satisfied. Raphael moved off through his people, giving them soft-voiced instructions. Micah moved up closer to me, with Merle and Noah at a very attentive distance. I looked at Micah and suddenly couldn't be this close and not touch him. I reached my hand out to him. His eyes widened, but he took my hand. His hand slid over mine in a play of pulsing warmth that almost took my breath away. I watched a similar reaction play on his face. What was going on? I drew my hand out of his, and it was like pulling it through melted taffy, so thick. I looked up to find that, except for Claudia and Igor, we were surrounded by were-leopards, his and mine. The moment I met Nathaniel's eyes, the power jolted through me. I turned from him to Cherry, and her pale eyes widened. The power was so thick it was like trying to breathe something liquid, as if it hurt for the air to go down.
The power leaped between me and Zane, Vivian and Caleb, who was next in the circle. Caleb, who I didn't particularly like. But as soon as I searched his face, the power leaped between us, just as it had with the others. He gasped, hand going to his chest as if he'd felt it like a blow there. His voice came out strangled.
What are you doing?
She is being Nimir-Ra, Micah said.
I turned back to him, but in the turning crossed Noah's gaze first. The power stretched between me and this stranger, and the fear showed on his face. I was strangely calm. It felt right. Good. Gina moved closer to Merle, and that drew my gaze. The power swung through her, from her. We were all like some great circuit of energy, sharing, flowing, growing. Tears trailed down Gina's face. She cried softly, clinging to Merle's arm. I met his eyes last, as if I was supposed to, and he tried to turn away, but it wasn't a matter of locking gazes. It was a matter of my attention going to him. The power, my beast, noticing him. The power lashed through him because he fought it. He tried to shield, but he couldn't shield from this. It wasn't that I was strong enough to force him. I didn't try to push. It was more that the power recognized him, and something, maybe his beast, resonated with the power. He turned slowly to stare at me, and the look on his face was pained. It didn't hurt. It felt warm and good and frightening. The power grew, wound tight and tighter, until it filled the air around us. Claudia said,
What the hell are you doing?
Bonding,
Raphael said, and he drew the two were-rats out of our circle. The instant they were gone, the circle tightened, and it was like the pressure of a storm. My ears needed to pop, as if the pressure of the air had changed. Micah moved to stand in front of me. The others formed a circle around us as if someone had choreographed it. We stared at each other and then reached a hand towards each other. It was hard to move forward, as if the air had grown solid and we had to push our way through. Our fingertips touched, and our hands slid together quickly, easily, like a fish breaking through water into open air. We spilled around each other, our arms, our bodies touching completely, as if we could walk into the other's body like it was an open door. His mouth hovered over mine, and the power was there, breathing, pulsing, hot against my lips. I tried to be afraid. Tried to draw back, but I didn't want to. It was as if a part of me that I hadn't even known existed was in charge, and no amount of common sense or doubts could stop it. It wasn't a kiss. It was a melding. The power poured in a scalding wave from his mouth to mine, from my mouth to his. I could feel the others, like lines of heat running out like spokes of a wheel, and Micah and I were the hub of that wheel. The power ran between us all, back and forth, liquid, burning, growing, growing, and melting. Melting boundaries, borders that kept us separate as people. It was as if Micah's body and mine were a door and we stepped into each other, closer than flesh could touch, closer than hearts could beat, and I felt his beast and mine roll through us, around us, as if the two great animals bound us together like a rope that ran through our flesh, our skin, our minds. And the beasts flared outward, traveled down those lines of power, and smashed into each of the others. I felt it as a physical blow, felt them stagger as our twinned beasts traveled the circle and caressed their beasts in turn. And our beasts came home in a rush of heat, like standing in the middle of a bonfire, but it was also a glorious rush, a joyousness like nothing I'd ever felt. I caught, with that rush of power, glimpses into all the others. I saw Gina tied to a bed, and a man above her like a shadow. Something evil that the power could not see clearly. Merle, covered in wounds and blood, huddled against a wall, weeping. Caleb, standing alone, covered in blood, his eyes haunted. Noah running down a hallway with screams chasing him, making him run faster. Cherry lying in a huge heap of warm bodies beside Zane and Nathaniel and me. Zane's memory was of sitting at my kitchen table eating, laughing with Nathaniel. Vivian lying in Stephen's arms in their bed. Nathaniel's memory was of me marking his back, but the sense of peace I got from him with the memory was stronger than the sense of sex, as if some great burden had lifted from him. And I saw Gregory, bound wrist to ankle behind his back, gagged, blindfolded, terrified. He lay naked on a bed of bones. I knew this was not a memory. This was what was happening to Gregory right this minute. And I could see it, feel his terror, and I still didn't know where he was. The power burst over us all in a wave of skin-rushing, nerve-caressing contentment, as if we'd all walked into a strange room and suddenly realized that everything in it was familiar. Every corner of the room was a key to our hearts, and the word that washed over me was home. Micah drew back first, shaking. I was crying and didn't remember when it had started. I heard other people crying in the dark, and I looked beyond us and found that it wasn't just our people. Some of the were-rats were crying, faces turned towards us with something like awe or fear in their eyes. Something made me look past all of them to the wood's edge. Richard stood shirtless, dressed in nothing but jeans and whatever shoes he was wearing. The sight of him there, painted with starlight and shadows, made me catch my breath. Not because he was beautiful or because I wanted him. That always went without saying with Richard. But because he was suddenly, for the first time, wild. It wasn't his anger that made the difference. I saw him at the edge of the woods, the way you'd come unexpectedly upon a wild animal, like glimpsing deer in the twilight, or that flash as something large and furred raced in front of your headlights, and you knew it wasn't a dog and it was too big to be a fox. Richard stood there, and when our eyes met, it sent a jolt through me from the top of my head to the soles of my feet and into the ground beyond. Whatever else Richard had been doing to screw up his pack's structure, one thing he'd done right. He'd embraced his beast. You could see it on him like a coat that he'd finally grown into. Something that fit him. Tailor-made. Marcus, the old Ulfric, had always insisted on dressing up, so at a glance you'd know he was king. Richard stood there with no clothes to distinguish him. Yet you knew he was king. Power makes you a monarch, and all the fancy robes in the world won't do the job without it. We stared at each other across the clearing. Underneath that new veneer of comfortable power, the look on his face made my chest so tight it hurt. If I could have thought of anything to say that would have made things less painful, I'd have said it, but I couldn't think of any words that would help. Jamil and Shang Da came up on either side of him, and there was a look of anger on Shang Da's face. Anger at me, I think. Jamil looked at Richard as if he wished there was some way for him to guard Richard from this, as well as from bullets and claws. But with some things, even a really good bodyguard can't take the hit for you. This was one of those things. Richard's voice came deep, loud, clear, untouched by the look on his face.
Welcome, Rat King of the Dark Crown Clan. Welcome, Nimir-Ra and Nimir-Raj of the Blood Drinkers Clan. Welcome to the lands of the Thronos Rocky Clan. The leopards have shown us this night what it truly means to be a clan, be they Pard, Lukoi, or Rodair. They show us what we all strive for, a true melding of all our parts into a whole.
Bitterness crept in at the last, but on the whole it was a lovely speech, and more heartfelt than pleasant.
Now join us at our Lupinar, and we will see if you can win back your lost cat.
There was anger in his voice, and I wondered if Gregory was about to pay the price for Richard's anger with me. Richard turned and melted into the trees with Shang Da at his side. Jamil spared a glance back at me, then followed. Micah leaned close and whispered,
I owe you several apologies. I'm sorry your Ulfric had to see us this way.
Me too, I said.
I said your cats were a mess, and I was wrong. You have made a home for your cats, and mine have nowhere to hide.
What is wrong with all of you? It wasn't perhaps the most diplomatic question, but it covered things.
That is a very long story.
Merle leaned over us. He spoke so low that I almost couldn't hear him.
Be very careful, for all our sakes.
They had some very serious eye contact. I said, "What is going on?" Micah raised my hand and laid a brief kiss on the knuckles.
Let's save your Gregory. That has to be priority tonight, right?
He smiled and tried to charm his way out of the stare I was giving him. I stared at him until the smile faded from his face, and he dropped my hand. Yeah, saving Gregory is priority for tonight, but I want to know what's going on.
One problem at a time, Micah said.
I was getting the very distinct feeling that if they all could have lied to me forever, they would have. It wasn't lying as much as hiding things from me. Things that had to do with blood and pain, and no matter how powerful they all were, Micah's Pard wasn't a family. Wasn't whole. Strangely, as messed up as me and my leopards were, we were a family. More so than Richard and his wolves, even. Richard was so busy fighting his moral battles and his power structure problems that there wasn't time for mending other things. Give me the Reader's Digest condensed version, Micah, I said.
Gregory is waiting for you to rescue him.
So give me a couple of sentences, but make it the truth, Micah.
Micah?
Merle said softly, but with force to his voice. It was a warning. I looked at the big man. What are you guys hiding, Merle? Micah touched my arm, brought my attention back to his face.
I told you that once we were taken over by a very bad man who still wants us, I'm searching for some place strong enough to keep us safe.
Are you saying this guy will come looking for you here in St. Louis?
Yes, he said.
Most alphas can take a hint, I said. Micah shook his head.
This one won't. He will never give us up.
He gripped my arm.
If you take us on, you'll have to deal with him eventually.
Is he bulletproof? I asked. The question seemed to confuse him because he frowned.
No, I guess not.
I shrugged. Not a problem, then. He looked at me.
What do you mean? That you'll just kill him?
It was my turn to look at him. Is there any reason I shouldn't? He almost smiled, stopped, then frowned again.
Just kill him. Just like that.
It was almost as if he were thinking it over, as if it had never occurred to him. Merle said,
He's a hard man to kill.
Unless he's faster than a silver bullet, Merle, nobody's that hard to kill. Raphael came slowly through the leopards, Claudia and Igor trailing him.
We've all been thinking of your leopards as lesser than us. What I just saw makes me envious.
I know how the wolves work, I said, and I know that they don't have a sense of home. First Reyna and Marcus made them afraid of each other. Now Richard's morals have him struggling to be safe. But you and yours seem pretty secure. How different is what I've done with my leopards from what everyone else is doing?
I've benefited from your loyalty, your sheer stubbornness. What I didn't realize until tonight is that you didn't save me just because I was your friend, or just because it was the right thing to do. You didn't risk yourself and your people to save me from torture because of the kind of moral rightness that Richard is fond of. You saved me because you could not bear the thought of leaving me behind.
He touched my face very gently.
Not from a sense of right and wrong, but because you are just that tender-hearted.
I looked at him. I've been called a lot of things, but never that. He chucked me under the chin like you would a child.
Don't make light of one of your better qualities. You love your people like a mother is supposed to love her children. You want what's best for them, even if that makes you uncomfortable, even if you don't like their choices.
I had to look away from the wonderment on his face, like he was looking at somebody else that couldn't be me.
You have never been their leopard queen in body, but you shamed us all tonight. It's not seeing your closeness to Micah that will torment Richard, though that will burn. It's that you gave us a glimpse of what we are all striving for our clans. Richard believes his moral rightness will get him where your leopards already are.
I looked up at him. My part is not a democracy, and I have a hell of a lot more than just presidential veto when it comes to decisions.
Richard knows that, better probably than anyone, and that will gall him, Anita.
It will make him doubt himself. I shook my head. Richard always doubts himself when it comes to the Lukoi. He'll never have surety about them until he has surety about who and what he is.
First, I have to accept the fact that you're kind-hearted. Now I have to accept the fact that you're insightful as well. I knew you were powerful, ruthless, and pretty, but that you have a mind and a heart besides is going to take some getting used to.
Does everybody pretty much think I'm just a sociopath who happens to have magical abilities?
It's all you let people see, he said. Until now.
He gazed out towards the circle of faces still turned to us. I saw a kind of hunger in their faces, and I knew that they had felt what I'd felt, a sense of true belonging, of being home within the circle. Not of bricks or mortar, but of flesh, of hands to grasp, arms to hold, smiles to share. So simple, so rare. All these months, I'd been worried I'd fail the were-leopards. I thought failure meant them dying or getting hurt. What I realized suddenly was that the true failure would have been if I hadn't given a damn. You can bandage a wound, set a broken bone, but not caring? You can't cure that, and you can't recover from it. 23. The Lupinar was a large clearing, 100 yards by 150 yards. The clearing appeared to be flat, but actually it sat in a large, smooth valley between hills. You couldn't notice it at night, but I knew that just beyond the trees that ringed the far side of the Lupinar were steep hills. It had taken me more than one visit to find what lay beyond the trees. Now all vision stopped at the far edge of the clearing. Torches that rose man-high were stuck into the ground on either side of the stone throne. The throne was a huge chair carved of rock, so old that there were places on the arms where countless generations of Ulfric's had touched it and worn away the stone. Probably the back and seat of the chair were worn as well, but they were covered by a spill of purple silk, suitably royal. There was something very primitive about the huge stone chair and its spill of cloth caught between the wavering golden light of the torches. It looked like a throne for some ancient barbaric king, someone who should wear animal skins and a crown of iron. Werewolves, most, but not all, in human form, stood or crouched in a huge circle. There was one opening in the circle which we walked through. The werewolves flowed behind us like a door of flesh closing. The were-rats spread around behind us and to either side, but we all knew if it came to a fight, we were outmatched and outflanked. Raphael and two very large were-rats stood to one side of me. Donovan Reese, the Swan King, was on the other side. Raphael had kindly given him a quartet of bodyguards. Micah stood just a little behind me, and my newly acquired bodyguards were just behind him. Our leopards had spilled out in a rough knot behind us, like a line of defense, before the main show of were-rats. Someone had hung cloth in the trees to one side of the throne. Black cloth, like a curtain, and it took a movement of the wind to draw my attention to it. It was held aside, and Sylvie came through, followed by a tall man I didn't know. Her face was less refined with no makeup, less soft. Her short hair curled neatly but carelessly. She was dressed in the first pair of jeans I'd ever seen her in, with a pale blue tank top and white jogging shoes. The tall man was thin the way basketball players are thin, all arms and legs and lanky muscle. Most of that lanky muscle showed because all he wore was a pair of cut-off jean shorts. But he, like Richard, didn't need finery. He moved in a circle of his own grace and power, like a tiger stalking into view. Except there were no bars to hide behind, and I'd had to leave my gun at home. He had short, dark hair that curled a little thicker than Sylvie's. His face was one of those that you couldn't decide was attractive or plain. It was made up of strong bones, long lines, thin lips on a wide mouth. I'd just about decided he was plain when he looked at me, and the moment I saw those dark eyes, I knew I was wrong. Intelligence burned in there. Intelligence and some dark emotion. He let anger flow over his face, and I realized the very force of his personality made him so striking that he was handsome,
though it was the kind of handsome that would never come across in a still photo, because it needed movement, his vibrating energy to make it work. I knew without being told that this was Jacob, and I knew something else. We were in trouble. Richard came next, and he moved in his own vibrating spill of power. He glided as gracefully, filled with as much anger as Jacob, but he still lacked something, some edge that the other man had. An edge of darkness, maybe. All I knew for sure was that Jacob was ruthless. I could almost smell it on him. And Richard, for better or worse, still was not. I sighed. I'd thought if he could just once embrace his beast, he'd be all right. He sat on the throne with the firelight playing in the loose waves of his hair, turning it to spun copper and burnished gold, the fire shadows playing on the muscles of his chest, shoulders, arms. He looked the part of the barbarian king, but there was still something in him, something soft. And if I could taste it, then so could Jacob. I had one of those moments of clarity that comes sometimes. There was nothing that any of us could do to Richard to make him truly harsh. He might act in anger, like he'd taken Gregory, but no matter what the world did to him, there would still be something in him that flinched. His only hope for survival was to surround himself with loyal people who wouldn't flinch. Jamil and Shang-Da stood together to one side of the throne, not too close, but not too far either. Shang-Da was back in his usual monochrome black business dress, black slacks, black shirt, black suit jacket, and the polished black shoes. He always looked very GQ, even in the woods. Jamil could dress up with the best of them, but he tried to be appropriate to the situation. He had on jeans that looked freshly pressed and a red muscle tank top that looked splendid against the darkness of his skin. He'd changed the beads in his waist-length cornrowed hair to red and black. The beads gleamed softly in the torchlight, as if they might be made of semi-precious stones. Jamil caught my glance. He didn't exactly nod, but he acknowledged me with his eyes. Shang-Da avoided my gaze, searching the crowd, but never quite looking at me. I think if Richard would have allowed it, the two of them would have done whatever was necessary to secure his throne. But they were hamstrung by Richard, and the best they could do was work within his honorable trap. Sylvie and I stared at each other for a few heartbeats. I'd seen her collection of bones of her enemies. She got them out periodically and handled them. She said it was comforting to run her hands over them. I personally liked a good stuffed toy and some really fine coffee, but hey, whatever makes you feel better. Sylvie would do whatever needed doing, if Richard would only let her. And if I'd still been Lupa, hell, we had enough ruthless people to get the job done if Richard would just get out of our way. We were so close, and at the same time, we weren't even in the ballpark. It was more than frustrating. It was like watching a train race towards Richard, and we were all yelling, "Get off the tracks! Get off the tracks!" Hell, we were trying to drag him off the tracks, and he was fighting us. If Jacob was the train, then I could kill him, and Richard would be safe. But Raphael was right. If it wasn't Jacob, it'd be someone else. Jacob wasn't the train hurtling to destroy Richard. Richard was. His voice filled the clearing.
"We gather here tonight to say goodbye to our Lupa and to choose another."
There was a rash of howls and applause from about half of the pack. But dozens of the werewolves stood silent, watching. It didn't mean they were on my side. Maybe they were neutral, but it was good to notice who wasn't a rousing supporter of my being kicked out of the pack.
"We are here to stand in final judgment for one who has wronged our pack by taking our Lupa from us."
There was less applause, fewer howls. It looked like the vote to condemn Gregory had been a close one. That made me feel better. Not much, but a little. Though if Gregory died, I guess it really didn't matter.
"We are also here to give the leopards Nimer-Ra a last chance to win back her cat."
The howls and applause stayed at about 50-50, but the general atmosphere was definitely cooler. The pack wasn't lost, and it certainly wasn't wholeheartedly on Jacob's side. I said a little prayer for guidance, because this was more a political problem,
and that wasn't one of my best things.
It is business between the Lucoy and the Pard. Why are the Rodare here, Raphael?
Richard asked. He talked like he didn't know us, very political, very distant.